Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
All the way back to 2008. Ruination, the early years.
Imagine hearing this this deeply profound, tear-filled political monologue about, you know, the fundamental right to human connection.
Right.
And then, I mean, literally in the very next breath, getting a highly detailed, completely unabashed report on the host's explosive office-clearing diarrhea.
It is quite the pivot.
It really is. So welcome to the messy, fascinating, and just entirely unfiltered world of 2008 digital broadcasting. I am King.
And I am Gail.
And we officially welcome you to Ruination, the early years. Our mission today is to dive into the archives from November 2008, just to summarize the life, the stories, and the absolute chaos radiating from the Big Fatty Online podcast, or, you know, the BFO.
Yeah, and to truly understand what we are exploring in this deep dive into the source material, you sort of have to mentally transport yourself back to that specific cultural moment.
Set the scene for us.
Right. So it is November 2008. The United States is locked in this historic, incredibly tense presidential election.
Oh, absolutely.
On top of that, you know, a brutal global recession is just beginning to hit everyday bank accounts. The holidays are looming, and the BFO universe is operating at absolute peak performance.
Just firing on all cylinders.
Exactly. Today, we are navigating a landscape built on intense political reactions, bizarre culinary choices.
Very bizarre.
Fiercely petty podcast rivalries, and these moments of unexpected, profound grief.
Well, let's start on the ground, right at the ballot box. I mean, it is Election Day 2008, and the host, Big Fatty, he is not giving you this polished pundit's view from a television studio.
No, definitely not.
He's giving you the painful physical reality of participating in democracy. So he waits in line to vote for 2.5 hours.
Which is a long time.
It is. And he gets on the microphone to complain loudly about his aching feet and his exhaustion. But then he famously declares that 2.5 hours is a lot shorter than 4 more years.
I mean, that immediate visceral connection is what made early independent audio so powerful, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The show wasn't just one guy in a room talking to himself. It really functioned as a grassroots, crowdsourced news network. You had listeners who were actively reporting from the field.
Oh, right. The rally.
Yeah. A prominent caller who goes by the name Baby Jar actually sends in live audio dispatches from a Barack Obama rally in Manassas, Virginia.
Which is wild to listen back to.
It is, because you hear the wind hitting the microphone. You hear the sheer scale of like 5,000 people standing in the freezing cold for hours, all just to hear the future president speak.
It provides this vibrant, textured reality that traditional news networks completely missed. You
know? Totally. But that pre-election electricity violently collides with a massive emotional whiplash once the results start rolling in.
Yeah, particularly regarding the passage of Proposition 8 in California.
Right.
Now, before we explore this emotional fallout, we do need to pause for a crucial rule check.
Yes, this is important. We want to explicitly remind you, the listener, that we are remaining completely politically neutral as we discuss this.
100%.
We take absolutely no sides on the political spectrum. We are simply reporting the viewpoints, the history, and the profound emotional reactions contained within the 2008 source material.
Taking absolutely no sides. We are just looking at the audio as a historical artifact.
Yeah.
So for context, Proposition 8 was a highly controversial California ballot proposition that, upon passing, banned same-sex marriage in the state.
Right.
And the reaction documented in the BFO archives is staggering. Big Fatty completely abandons his usual frivolous laughing demeanor.
He really does.
He takes a massive chunk of his strictly timed 20-minute daily show to play a 6.5-minute audio clip. It is this impassioned speech by Keith Olbermann, who was a very prominent MSNBC television commentator at the time.
Focusing heavily on love, marriage, and equal rights.
Exactly.
And sacrificing a third of your daily audio real estate to play someone else's speech is a massive structural shift for an independent broadcaster.
Huge.
And it effectively cracked the audience's emotional dam wide open. I mean, the voicemail line is flooded.
Oh, the Turniped call.
Yeah, a regular caller named Turniped up in Canada leaves a message where he is literally weeping while riding a public streetcar.
On a public streetcar, yeah.
His voice is shaking as he urges the rest of the audience not to be complacent, reminding them that rights can be rescinded at a moment's notice.
It's so intense. You know, think of the BFO network like a hyper-local dive bar. The TV in the corner of this bar is showing historic, world-changing national news. But everyone is still sitting on their usual bar stools, right? They're ordering their usual drinks.
I like that analogy.
Well, it makes you wonder, doesn't dedicating so much time to a heavy political speech on what is ostensibly a comedy and lifestyle show prove that Big Fatty was deliberately positioning himself as a moral anchor for this community?
Rather than just an entertainer trying to get easy laughs.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, he saw his audience reeling and stepped directly into the void to help them process it. Instead of allowing the community to wallow in the defeat of Prop 8, he actively reframes the loss as a catalyst.
Right, the Stonewall thing.
Yes. He calls the moment Stonewall 2.0. Mm-hmm. He explicitly tells his listeners not to let the terrorists win, which is the rather intense language he used for the opposition.
Very intense.
But he tells them to harness that deep disappointment and channel it into energy for the fights ahead. He reads the emotional temperature of the room and immediately provides a psychological path forward.
But, I mean, you cannot live in a state of elevated political anguish forever. The physical body eventually demands attention.
It always does.
And the show executes a spectacular pivot, dropping the heavy historical weight of the election to plunge straight into the unabashed, unfiltered reality of Big Fatty's biological functions.
Yeah, we transition directly from Stonewall 2.0 into the chaos of the November diet.
It is a remarkable juxtaposition. I mean, in the same breath that we are discussing the future of civil rights, we are hearing about a listener named Straight Bob calling in.
Oh my gosh, Straight Bob.
He calls in to announce he placed a 50-cent Australian horse race bet on the trifecta.
Which he lost.
And Big Fatty matches this by chronicling his meticulous, highly mundane, local grocery hauls from Publix.
The details are incredible.
We are treated to a passionate review of Ore-Ida microwavable steamed potatoes mashed up with milk and butter.
Yeah.
And we learn that his election day feast was a massive corned beef accompanied by a head of cabbage cut into thick wedges, all slow-cooked in a crock pot overnight.
You know, the intimacy of knowing exactly what a stranger is eating for dinner is fascinating, but it reaches a chaotic peak during what the archives refer to as the coal mine incident.
Oh, brace yourself.
Yeah. So the coal mine is his affectionate, slightly cynical nickname for his day job. His workplace hosts a Tex-Mex luncheon.
Always a risky move.
Big Fatty approaches the buffet and aggressively consumes shrimp fajitas, meat chili, a bag of Fritos, mushroom queso, and finishes the entire ordeal by eating his very first serving of Dippin' Dots ice cream.
Which is just an absolute gastronomic weapon of mass destruction.
It really is. And the biological fallout is swift and unforgiving. He gets right on his microphone, entirely unedited, and issues unapologetic complaints about experiencing explosive gas and, quote, loose bowels that went straight through his system in a matter of 20 minutes.
Just boom, right on the air.
There is no attempt to clean up the audio. There is no attempt to present a sanitized version of his day.
So it makes me wonder, is this extreme oversharing actually a calculated strategy?
How so?
Like, by immediately following a deeply serious 6.5-minute political monologue with a graphic report on his own flatulence, is he aggressively deflating his own ego so the audience never sees him as pretentious?
You know, it acts like a digital trust fall.
Okay, yeah.
Imagine inviting someone over to your house for the first time and deliberately showing them the messy, unorganized inside of your bedroom closet.
Right, like here's all my junk.
Exactly. By refusing to separate high-minded political greed from the absolute indignities of middle-aged digestion, he is creating a 360-degree, fully authentic human persona.
That makes sense.
It reassures you, the listener, that despite the shifting political tectonic plates of the outside world, your host remains fundamentally, comfortably, and embarrassingly flawed. You feel safe because you know nothing is being hidden from you.
And that intense, uncurated intimacy is exactly the fuel that powers this fiercely dedicated and, let's be honest, frequently petty community of listeners.
Oh, so petty.
Because once you know what a man eats for dinner and how his stomach reacts, the boundaries of polite society completely disappear.
The interpersonal drama documented in these archives is incredible. The most prominent saga is the ongoing rivalry with a fellow podcaster named Auntie Vera.
Ah, yes.
Who Big Fatty affectionately and constantly refers to as the sea hag.
The sea hag.
In November, he ruthlessly mocks her recent Halloween episode, flat out calling it scary bad.
Just brutal.
And he publicly shames her for packing 8 pieces of luggage for a simple 2-week cruise.
Which, to be fair, 8 pieces of luggage is a lot.
It's excessive.
But the tension really peaks when Big Fatty, allegedly makes a guest appearance on Auntie Vera's milestone 200th episode.
Allegedly.
Right, allegedly, because when the episode airs, Big Fatty loudly claims the audio was heavily manipulated.
Oh, the audio shopping.
Yes. He accuses Auntie Vera of audio shopping his voice to make him sound incredibly drunk, claiming she altered the file so he was slurring his words and randomly yelling, "Stop the traffic."
Stop the traffic.
Which is hilarious. Though, in a rare moment of self-awareness, Big Fatty readily admits to his own audience that he is frequently overserved in his daily life.
So who really knows? You know, the early podcasting ecosystem functioned a lot like a small town where everyone listened to everyone else's shows, creating this closed-loop soap opera.
Very much so.
But the feuds are balanced out by moments of genuine community connection, especially as the holidays approach. November brings the major interactive event of the month, which is the Thanksgiving Story Contest.
Sponsored by Mike Hip.
Yes, sponsored by the return of Mike Hip, a personality representing a company called Soy Candles by Phoebes.
Naturally.
Naturally. Listeners are instructed to call the voicemail line, leave their craziest holiday stories, and enter a drawing to win a 2-pack of candles.
The stories that pour in from the community are chaotic and deeply memorable. You have a caller named Kevin in Danbury telling this wild tale about his friend, who he affectionately refers to as his fag hag.
Right.
She accidentally burns her chest on a hot stove during a frantic family gathering.
Ouch.
Yeah. But right next to that slapstick comedy, you get a much more sobering, poignant story from Brian in Danbury.
That one was tough.
It was. Brian calls in to talk about his father absolutely refusing to attend the family Thanksgiving dinner, choosing to stubbornly storm out of the house instead.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the entire cast of characters in this network, it operates almost exactly like a professional wrestling roster.
Oh, that's a perfect way to put it.
Right. Everyone has their distinct gimmick, their long-standing rivalries, and their surprise alliances. You have a caller named Miss West, known for leaving perfectly grammatical drunk dial emails.
Which is a skill.
A true skill. You have Kim Beaver, who sends in personalized original songs sung in a bizarre for Rose accent about inappropriate touch and bacon and ham.
It's so weird.
So weird. But how do all these chaotic voicemails and petty feuds actually serve the structure of the show? Is this the glue holding the network together?
Well, it provides the audience with a low-stakes reality show that they can actively participate in.
Yeah.
And Big Fatty uses the emotional weight of those holiday stories to vocalize his core philosophy about community. When he responds to Brian's incredibly sad Thanksgiving story about his father walking out, Big Fatty gets on his soapbox and explicitly states that you make your own family.
And make your own family.
He tells Brian that the father's absence is entirely the father's loss. The podcast itself is functioning as that chosen family. It offers the audience a centralized digital dining table where they can share both their burnt turkey disasters and their genuine, quiet moments of holiday loneliness without judgment.
The concept of the chosen family is a beautiful framework. Especially because November forces Big Fatty to confront the reality of his biological family and his own personal methods for coping with the relentless passage of time.
Right. He travels back to his hometown of Atlanta, which he jokingly calls Hatlanta, to attend his aunt's funeral.
Yeah.
But instead of a somber, weeping reflection on mortality, he remembers her affectionately as a crazy woman. He shares vivid memories of her playing the piano, singing and dancing, all at the exact same time.
Quite the multitasker.
Truly. During the service, the minister even noted that she didn't live in reality. She lived entirely in her own reality.
I love that.
Yeah, and Big Fatty openly points out that her eccentricities explain a whole lot about his own personality. He sees his own reflection in her absolute refusal to conform to societal expectations.
He uses nostalgia as a powerful anchor while dealing with these shifts in his life. He structures his daily routines around a segment he calls Memory Lane Music.
Which is a great segment.
It really is.
Yeah.
Throughout November, he heavily curates content from the CBS Early Show, which happens to be running a series featuring former child stars from the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
So much nostalgia.
Yeah, and he tests his listeners' memories by playing obscure television theme songs. He plays a theme to Pippi Longstockings, specifically noting the imagery of her walking down the street with one foot in the gutter, and he plays the theme to the 1980s sitcom Benson.
Now, the Benson reference is brilliant because he actually ties that 1980s sitcom back to the anxiety of the 2008 election.
How so?
Well, he reminds his audience that the Benson series finale ended on a massive election night cliffhanger between Benson and Governor Gatling.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, and it was a cliffhanger that was never actually resolved on television. It's a clever way of processing current political tension through the safe lens of childhood nostalgia.
That's really smart. But alongside that nostalgia looking backward, there is a constant unwavering countdown looking forward. Yes, the cruise. Big Fatty is endlessly tracking the days until his upcoming March 2009 vacation on the Celebrity Solstice cruise ship. He is traveling with his real-world friends and frequent show characters, you know, Miss Kitty, Granny, and Miss Porter.
The usual crew.
The usual crew. And throughout the entire month of November, he religiously updates the listeners on the timeline. 118 days to go. 117 days to go. Exactly 100 days to go.
It's relentless.
It is. Why on earth would an audience care about a stranger's vacation happening 4 months from now? Especially a vacation they aren't even invited on.
Because that cruise countdown acts as a digital lighthouse for the community.
A lighthouse, okay.
Yeah. You have to remember the context of late 2008. The economy is crashing, jobs are vanishing, the days are getting physically shorter, and the winter is getting colder.
It was a bleak time.
It was very bleak. But every single day, without fail, Big Fatty is there on the microphone saying, "We are one day closer to the sunshine. We are one day closer to the cruise."
It's an anchor in the storm.
Exactly. If you look at the underlying mechanics of the show, the nostalgia of memory lane looking to the past, the mourning of a family member in the present, and the daily countdown to a future cruise, they all serve the exact same psychological function.
Which is what?
They map out the passage of time. They offer you, the listener, a comforting, unshakable rhythm that outlasts any single frantic election cycle or any unexpected personal tragedy. It provides a drumbeat of stability when the rest of the world feels entirely out of control.
And that unwavering drumbeat is what kept people tuning in day after day, year after year, forming bonds that rivaled physical friendships.
Which leaves you with a final thought to mull over as we close out our exploration of November 2008.
Okay, let's hear it.
We currently live in a digital world that is obsessed with carefully curated, picture-perfect social media feeds, right? Where everyone is pressured to act like a flawless brand.
Absolutely exhausting.
It is. But what if the most powerful, enduring way to build genuine human connection isn't by broadcasting your shiny successes? What if true connection is built by unapologetically sharing your mundane grocery routines, your petty grievances, and your most explosive everyday embarrassments?
Now that is something to think about the next time you find yourself trying to hide your own messy reality from the world. I am King.
And I am Gil.
Please come back next Saturday for another month of Ruination, the early years.
And remember to tune in each Sunday for Ruination Repeat, which recaps last week's current BFO episodes.
Thank you for listening. And be sure to tune in next weekend for the newest episode of Ruination, the early years.
Well, we hope you enjoyed today's trip down memory lane on Ruination, the early years. Join us again next weekend. We'll see you then.